Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, John West on the scientific roots of foundational American principles.
The founders were actually reading many of what were known as the British natural theologians. And these were early scientists who also, they studied nature because they thought it proclaimed evidence of God. And a lot of our founders read those. So when they said, you know, that there's a creator and the creator, that he endows us with our rights, that wasn't just a fairy story. That wasn't just a rhetoric. They believed reality pointed to a creator. That was objective reality for everyone.
John West, next. On today's program, Spencer Dahlke talks with John West, Vice President of the Discovery Institute, about his new book, Endowed by Our Creator, The Bible, Science, and the Battle for America's Soul. Very appropriate in this year of the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, he believes our founding was grounded in the findings of science.
It's a really interesting headline title of your book, you know, talking about science and the intersection with our American identity. You talk about the battle for America's soul. What do you understand by that phrase?
I think it plays off something that the great English writer G.K. Chesterton said when he came to America in the 1920s, and then he went back and wrote a book about what he saw in America. And although he wasn't an American, I think he hit upon something kind of important. And he said, basically, of all the countries in the world, America, in his view, was the only nation founded on a creed. You know, if you're in Japan, typically to be a Japanese citizen, you're of Japanese ethnic descent, and that's who you are. And that's also true until more recently, most European and other countries. Americans do have similarities between many of the immigrants who have come here. But what he was pointing out is that what really unified us was this creed that he found in the Declaration of Independence, of these fundamental ideas that everyone who's an American, even if they came here 5 years ago as opposed to 200 years ago, they're really expected to believe, or at least they should be expected to believe. And he found that rather interesting because he thought that the Declaration of Independence and it was actually, as he talked about, a theological creed because it makes a lot of claims about God and human beings. And so my book is about how those fundamental truths of the Declaration of Independence, what they actually mean, because there's a lot of confusion about it, how they draw from a Christian worldview, but then how starting in the 19th century and into the 20th century with the progressive era and even today, how lots of Americans trash those ideas, often in the name of science, and how now there's a real battle even among some parts of conservatives who don't like the idea of what they call America as a creedal nation. And sometimes they, I think, offer a false choice. Well, either you think that religion and culture don't matter, or you think that there's a creed and there's sort of no common ground. I mean, I think it's correct to say that we're not just a creed. America isn't just an idea. It is a people, and the people have a culture, and that culture is formed by many things, including religion, in this case, Christianity. So that's true. But that doesn't get you all that far because you still have to get to, well, how did it shape us? What are those ideas? You know, even if you say that sort of Christianity influenced America or that, say, a lot of Americans historically came from England as ancestors on my dad's side did, go back to the 1600s. They were settlers of Connecticut, Protestant dissenters, the Pilgrims, not on the Mayflower, but a few years later. So I understand that idea of a heritage American. But that doesn't get you so far if you're descended from that today and you trash our beliefs. So America always has been about there's some fundamental beliefs that we staked our lives on, actually. And that starting the 19th century with arguments over slavery, but then the progressive era and social Darwinism and the claim that there really are no fundamental rights because there really isn't a God who gives them. My book is about that. It's about the real meaning of the Declaration of Independence, what the American Creed really is, how it was influenced by a biblical worldview, and then the battle that we're in, certainly over the past 150 years and more, whether or not we're really going to uphold those ideas and understand them, and both on left and now on some parts of the right.
You mentioned that's a controversial idea, apparently, that America is founded on principles and not on, you know, religion or ethnicity or anything like this.
it has become. And I think that on I consider myself a theologically and politically conservative Christian. Having said that, there are some on the right, I think because they've seen how these ideas have been misused by, say, the progressives and sort of twisted beyond recognition, rather than go back to the original ideas and defend them, they just say, oh, to heck with it, let's just, you know, trash it all. And so, interestingly, there were two speeches recently in the last couple of months by two sitting Supreme Court justices, and they both got a lot of notoriety, especially including among conservatives. One was by Justice Gorsuch, but he was giving an interview where he actually said exactly what you just said, that we're based on a creed and not just race or ethnicity or even religion, even though I would say, you know, Christianity feeds into those ideas. But ultimately, the test of whether you're a citizen is not whether you're a Christian or whether you are of a certain race. And so he said that, and he got roasted by many of the people, even on the right, who have been persuaded that we aren't really a creed. I mean, when they say it more moderately, that we're not just an idea, I think that's fine. That's true. We're a culture. We're a people. Where I sort of go off is where people just even attack the idea that there is a creed that everyone should be expected to believe in, and that the founders thought those were right for everyone, whether they're Christian or Jew or something else, that it's right for everyone. And that, because that is what the founders believed. And then Justice Clarence Thomas gave a talk, which actually wasn't as controversial, but I think it's because people didn't really read or look at the full talk, because he said, you know, our Constitution is great, but if you want to find out the real goals, the ends, the principles of America, you have to read the Constitution in light of the Declaration of Independence, which provides, you know, the bigger view of why we have government to begin with and our fundamental rights. And so that's another way of saying that America does have a creed.
Speculating a little bit, I guess, to the opponents of this idea that America is a creedal nation. If America is not such a country, one built on principles, then what would they say we are? Who are we then as Americans? What's our identity?
Well, a lot of them go back to we're ethnically white and that we're Christians, although the people making this are themselves sort of at loggerheads, because there's one section called the Catholic Integralist, and so they think we should be Catholic, you know, Roman Catholic Christians should be the de facto religion of America. And then the other are in some pockets of Reformed Christianity, and I actually am in that wider view of Reformed Christianity, but there's a pocket that call themselves Christian nationalists, which, defending what you mean, it can be okay or not, but I'm talking about some of the self-labeled Christian nationalists who are like the Catholic Integralists, but they think that the imposed religion by the magistrate should be Protestant Reformed Christianity. Sort of they pine for Calvin's Geneva. And I think both are really misguided, and they also are really misguided because they don't read enough of the American founders. The American founders were very supportive of the cultural teachings of Christianity, but whether they were devout Baptists or devout Presbyterians or devout Calvinists or not, they also supported religious liberty, and they also thought they were very skeptical of the idea of giving the magistrate or the government the right to impose one particular religion or punish people who don't have that religion.
Since America is based on principles, you know, in the Declaration and such, where did those principles come from? I mean, I have heard they're organic.
Well, let's just go through a few of the ideas in the Declaration of Independence. The Declaration actually starts by referring to something that most people just pass over. It's a phrase, the laws of nature and of nature's God. Where does that come from? Well, it actually comes from both the Bible and the Middle Ages and into the 16 and 1700s, many Christian thinkers and then ultimately some non-Christian thinkers, but it really is rooted in Christianity. So what are the laws of God? Well, the laws of God are the laws given by the Bible. I mean, that's the Ten Commandments, other things, that's the laws of God. But what are the laws of nature? And sometimes people think, well, this is some secular atheist plot. No, it's not. The laws of nature are what the Bible talks about, say, in Romans 2, when Paul says that the moral law is actually written on the hearts even of the Gentiles. And throughout the Bible, both Old Testament and New Testament, God appeals to people's sense of justice, their sense of equity, their sense of right and wrong, as if they have this sense, regardless of whether they have the Bible or not. And so what the founders were saying, were encapsulating in laws of nature and nature's God, were encapsulating this Christian view that morality can be known both through special divine revelation through the Bible, and I happen to think as a Christian that's the clearest exposition, but that God did not leave us, even with our sin, did not leave us without a witness to the fundamental laws of morality and right and wrong. He wrote them on our hearts. Yes, we can deface them in various ways, but I agree. When C.S. Lewis, who many people know, wrote his book, Mere Christianity, and also a little book called The Abolition of Man, where he argued that there was this fundamental law of right and wrong that everyone has some access to, whether they're Christians or not, he was just re-articulating what Paul said. And then it wasn't just Paul. Starting after the Bible, pretty much every serious Christian thinker through the centuries made the same arguments. You certainly find it in the Middle Ages. You find it in people like Aquinas, who is Catholic. You find the same view in Martin Luther and in John Calvin. Sometimes some of my fellow evangelical Protestants think that this idea that there's a natural moral law written on us is an invention of Catholics. No, Catholics and Protestants agreed on the same time. And the actual phrase, laws of nature, you know, and nature's God, can be found in a slight variation in John Locke. And so then some people think, well, John Locke was more of a secular Enlightenment thinker. There's debate on that. But where did he get that phrase from? He got from Richard Hooker, who was an Anglican theologian, and Hooker took it from Thomas Aquinas. That's just one concept in the Declaration of Independence, that it starts off on giving the big view of things is that we're subject to the laws of nature and nature's God. So it's basically saying the Bible and our conscience written on our hearts, we're all subject to that. You know, whether you're Christian or Jewish or Muslim or something else, the laws of nature and nature's God are real, and we know them both because through our conscience and through the Bible. So that's just one little way. But let's get to maybe, you know, the biggest, most famous phrase of the Declaration is probably that all men are created equal. Well, where do you get that from? It's interesting. Let me actually back up before launching fully on that. A lot of people really don't understand that. And I talk in my book, when I was a college professor, I taught hundreds upon hundreds of students about the Declaration of Independence. And when we came about all men are created equal, it became clear that most of them really didn't know what it meant. They wanted it to be true, but the experience, the idea that I think anyone who thinks about it is that humans are equal. There are all sorts of differences. We don't have the same intelligence. I'm not as capable at math as many people are. In fact, C.S. Lewis, who's brilliant on many things, flunked his math exams trying to get into Oxford. And certainly I wouldn't be a professional NBA basketball player. And so there are all sorts of differences and inequalities in wealth and talents and everything. And so what do the founders mean that all men are created equal? This is nonsense. In fact, John Adams, who helped, was on the committee that wrote the Declaration of Independence, his son wrote him. We have this poignant sort of correspondence I talk about in the book, who's saying, Dad, basically, what does that mean? That's not true. Everyone is radically unequal. John Adams then has a very interesting reply, which we could go into, but I want to say more generally. Well, what did it mean? They were hearkening back to the teaching of Christianity that we're all created in the image of God. And so I go through basically seven different ways we are all actually equal, and a lot of them owe to a Christian understanding of things. The first way the founders thought we were equal really is humans are different than other living things. We have the capability of reason, so we're not like a mosquito or a rock. As a class, humans are much more equal to each other in being able to reason than any of us are with a dog, even though I love dogs. We have moral capabilities even if we trash it. You know, again, a mosquito isn't going to deliberate morally about whether to bite you or not. Humans can deliberate about moral things. And so again, as a class, humans are much more equal to each other than they are to anyone else. But then there are some other ways that the founders talked about that people don't know, really focus on. It's not that we're just equal in positive ways. They thought we were all sinful. Well, where did they get that from? From the Bible. They got that from in New England for generations, even after the Puritans. They taught in the New England Primer, they taught people their ABCs, and A was, in Adam's fall, sinned we all. So this was ingrained in the American consciousness, and this is one reason why the American Revolution didn't end up like the French Revolution, is that human beings are also equally sinful. They also thought, I talk about a neglected founder who signed both the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. His name was James Wilson, originally from Scotland, and he talks about how we all have souls that go after death, that, you know, we have an immortal soul. That's a way that all humans are equal. So there were very specific ways coming out of largely the Christian tradition that the founders thought that we were equal. Now, they didn't think, and the Christian tradition does not teach, that the only way you can know all of these things is through the Christian tradition. I think Christianity clearly espouses them. But again, God doesn't leave himself without witness. To know that people are sinful, you don't need to read the Bible. You just need to look around you. To know that human beings have reasoning powers, whereas mosquitoes don't, you just need to look around you. Now, again, because of our sinfulness, I think a lot of that's obscured if you don't believe in the Bible. But the truths in the Bible, I think sometimes Christians have this wrong idea that you can't be expected to believe those truths unless you're a Christian who believes in the Bible. The founders would have disagreed with that, although they thought, and in fact, even non-Christians among the founders thought that the idea of human equality was most clearly taught in the Bible. So someone like Thomas Paine, who trashed the Bible, believed in God, but thought the Bible was basically a bunch of fables, he himself admitted that the idea of human equality you find really first and in pristine teaching in the Bible. So this was something that Christians and non-Christians, deists, all agreed on during the founding, that the Bible was like the clearest exposition. But they also believed, Christian or non-Christian, that those truths, although they may be clearly taught in the Bible, ultimately, their truth does not rise or fall on whether you believe in the Bible. They're really true. And I think sometimes Christians have bought into that. This is really, they don't realize this. It's the result of modern secular philosophy to think that there's no correspondence between what's in the Bible and what's in the real world. And so that's why they say, well, you know, unless you believe the Bible, you can't really be an American citizen. Well, you need to believe in the truths held in the Bible, but you, even if you don't believe in the Bible, you can be subject to those truths. There is a real moral law between right and wrong. That's written on our hearts. Even if you don't believe in the Bible, you don't get a get out of jail free card. You know, I love how Augustine put it in one of his sermons. There is this natural moral law that's talked about in the Bible, and people know whether theft or adultery or other things are wrong. But then he goes in to say, even if they say they don't, commit adultery against them or steal their things, and suddenly they will acknowledge that, yeah, no, a theft isn't a good thing if my stuff is being taken, or adultery isn't a good thing if it's my spouse who's abandoning me. And so this idea, I think Christians need to avoid this modernist idea that the beliefs of the Bible are just, if you just have enough faith, and so it can only be subject to Christians who believe in Christianity, they're the only ones subject to the moral law. No, the moral law applies to all of us because it's also written on our hearts. So anyway, that's a long-winded answer, but I think that the idea of human equality did arise out of a Christian worldview, unquestionably, but those specific things where, you know, the founders did not deny, and in fact were very clear that they weren't meaning that we're all equally talented in the same talents, that we're all, you know, all have the same wealth, or that we should try to equalize everyone's wealth. But they did think in certain very specified ways about, you know, that we have reason as humans, we have the capability of morality, we have souls, we're sinful, and we actually have the same natural rights because God created them for us. And again, those were the ways they thought we were equal. And I document everything I say here, you know, I'm just making assertions, but in my book, I actually cite all the writings of the founders where they actually say these things.
My guest today is John West. He is Vice President and Managing Director of the Discovery Institute and author of Endowed by Our Creator, The Bible, Science, and the Battle for America's Soul. I mean, that's the core, I suppose, people have said, of, you know, the American identity is the equality and the consent of the governed, that sort of a thing. But how much...
Well, yeah, right into... So because we're equal in those fundamental respects... That plays into we're endowed with inalienable rights. at life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I spend a lot of time talking about that because there's a lot of misunderstanding about that. But that comes directly from the idea that we're both created equal and that God is the endower of rights. And that wasn't just boilerplate rhetoric. When they said that God endowed us with rights, they didn't think God was a fairy story. And I also probably am one of the first who actually delves into why they thought there was a creator. Because many people don't realize that at the time of the founding, the 1700s, it was coming off the rise of the scientific revolution. And the scientific revolution, again, was influenced by Christians. Most of the founders of what we consider modern science, they were motivated to do science because they thought nature proclaimed God's handiwork. And that it was because nature was created by a supra-rational God that it was coherent and we could understand it. I mean, if you read creation stories of non-Christian religions around the time of the Bible, a lot of the creation stories are about how the gods fought each other, or, you know, I think one in Babylonia that they were fighting each other and plunged and tore out the belly of another, and then humans popped out or something. It was that nature was the result of chaos and chance and not intention or rationality. And if that's your view of nature, it's hard to develop a view of science because you don't expect nature to be rational or super rational or to be understandable. But Christians thought that God created everything. He created it originally good, and that God is, I'd say, super rational. He's not just rational, he's super rational. And you should expect nature to reflect his wisdom. And so nature is actually there understandable for us to understand, and we should expect it to be coherent. That was the animating impulse of modern science. And they all thought that nature's complexity, that its purposefulness pointed logically to a creator. And our founders, even deists like Benjamin Franklin, who believed in God, but not that Jesus was God, sadly for him, thought that nature proclaimed evidence of a creator. And the founders were actually reading many of what were known as the British natural theologians. And these were early scientists who also, they studied nature because they thought it proclaimed evidence of God. And a lot of our founders read those. So when they said, you know, that there's a creator and the creator, that he endows us with our rights, that wasn't just a fairy story. That wasn't just a rhetoric. They believed reality pointed to a creator. That was objective reality for everyone. And then you just think about life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Why does our right to life come from a creator? Well, that's because we don't create ourselves. We don't create our kids. You know, they develop in the womb. We owe our life to God. And so the point is that if we owe our life to our creator, human beings don't have the right to arbitrarily take the life of someone else because they didn't give them life. That also means, according to James Wilson, who is one of our key founders, that we don't have the right to take our own lives because our own life, and he writes about this, that we don't have a right to take other people's lives arbitrarily, you know, innocent human life. I'm not talking about when people commit crimes, but we also don't have the right to suicide because we ultimately don't own ourselves. So that's what they meant with the right to life. And liberty and pursuit of happiness sort of go together, but there's a big misunderstanding today. Liberty was not license. Liberty, according to the founders, because it was bounded by the laws of nature and nature's God, liberty was actually understood not as the opposite of both slavery on one side and licentiousness or libertinism on the, or anarchy on the other side. It was sort of the golden mean. It was the right to do things within the laws of nature and nature's God. It was a very important thing. So to live your life, to pursue your career, if it's a lawful career, to move wherever you want among the United States, you know, to do things like that. It wasn't the right to use drugs that destroy you, to engage in pornography or other things. That's not what they were talking about. Liberty was different from both anarchy or slavery. In fact, they thought anarchy was slavery to your passions. But within that, that does mean a lot of things. So the founders thought that the right to liberty included the right to your opinions, including your opinions about God. And so that's why they did. So someone like, say, the only pastor to sign the Declaration of Independence was devout conservative evangelical John Witherspoon. And in his lectures on moral philosophy, which too many people haven't read, but I have, and I share them in my book, he talks about the importance of the liberty of our own opinions, including our opinions about how best to worship God. Again, he was a really for evangelical conservative Christianity, but he thought that the government should not be punishing people based on their religious beliefs, because that's, you know, God calls us to that, and you're not going to get Christianity or genuine Christianity through a sword.
Could it be said that part, or even a large part, of how we have gone astray today is that we have lost the idea of equality, that we don't actually believe that people are equal anymore? How has our foundation shift there, and even our science, maybe?
Big picture, the founders thought there was objective scientific evidence of a creator. Move ahead just a few decades, where people began in the name of science to say, well, humans are radically unequal. You had this even before Darwin. You had it among some scientists in the early 1800s. And this played into, say, for example, the Confederacy, which their constitution, which their vice president, Alexander Stevens, boasted on, was the first constitution founded on the new scientific reality that humans are radically unequal, and especially blacks were just completely inferior, and that science taught that, and that's why the Confederacy was going to last forever. Well, fortunately, he was wrong on that. But then, right on the cusp of the Confederacy in 1859, Darwin published On the Origin of Species, and then later his book, The Descent of Man, where he made his own argument for radical human inequality, that all humans, not just blacks, but you know, we're on this evolutionary scale, and we go back to apes, and that he graded humans based on how close they were to our ape-like ancestors, supposedly. What came out of that was the American Progressive Era, which is, well, if humans are radically unequal, then this idea that just government should be based on consent of the governed, and we didn't really discuss about that, but the idea that the Declaration says that it's because of these things that we are equal and we have these unalienable rights, that's why just governments are based on consent of the governed. They're not just top down. That's because if we're fundamentally equal. But Darwin said we're fundamentally unequal. And so you had a rise of progressive era activists that said, well, no, that means, those are myths, basically. That means why we need the new scientific elite, basically the bureaucracy, that which they conceived of, that government should less be by elected people who are subject to the views of the voters, and it should be administered by experts who staff unelected bureaucracies that will tell us what to do for our own good. And I talk about this, and I document it. You know, again, I'm just asserting it here, but read my book. You know, Justice Clarence Thomas, in that great speech I referred to earlier that he gave about how our principles come from the Declaration, he also talks about Woodrow Wilson and how that got abandoned during the Progressive Era, but he doesn't have time to give a lot of documentation in his speech. If you are interested in that and how our underlying beliefs in human equality got betrayed in the name of, I'd say hijacked in the name of something that really wasn't science, but Darwinian pseudoscience, read my book. Because this is exactly what the founders of modern American political science in the late 1800s, early 1900s, they said. I mean, they said in their own writings. And then they had a new view of government, that the new view of government was not to allow us to exercise our own rights and liberties. It was experts to manage things for us. And ultimately, John Burgess, one of the founders of the new political science, says the ultimate end of government now is the apotheosis of man. Well, apotheosis means creating God. And so the deification of man. So rather than government under God and the rights he gave us, our ultimate goal of the state should be the apotheosis of man, to create godlike human beings, which, of course, those would usually be the rulers, not the ordinary people.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to today's guest, John West, author of the book Endowed by Our Creator, The Bible, Science, and the Battle for America's Soul. He is vice president of the Discovery Institute. On tomorrow's program, it's Dave Bowden on parenting the anxious and AI-saturated Gen Alpha.
You know, arty, but that's what's coming. That's where we're at, I think, you know, especially over the next few years when the robots start occupying the world, which makes me sound like a lunatic, but it's coming. So these Gen Alpha kids are going to come of age in a world where robots are going to be actively involved, as well as the artificial intelligence algorithms. 65% of Gen Alpha kids are going to work in jobs that don't even yet exist. They're going to grow up into a world which is changing rapidly. So what we've got to teach them as parents and educators is to be more human and not less.
That's tomorrow at the same time right here on His People.